How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Saw that. I saw Drew McIntyre came back and kicked Sammy in the face. I think it was something along those lines.
You did see that, I'm assuming. Yes. No, that was the McIntyre thing. Raw was one of those things that was largely spoiled for me all over social media. And it was weird, too, because
first hour was commercial free, too, right?
Half hour. So it was really just the pearl. Like Raw goes a half hour without commercials all the time. Like that whole thing was stupid. I think Pierce said in his promo first hour, and then it was corrected the first half hour. Someone probably realized, wait, this is a 2-hour show. We need to air these commercials
at some point. We got
sponsors. But that was great. Like the promo between Seth Rollins and CM Punk was fantastic. Like, and just everything they talked about, and then Sami Zayn arguing with Seth Rollins afterwards, like about, you know, you stabbed Roman in the back and Rollins being like, I remember when you hit him with a chair too. Like just the whole series of promos between everybody was so good. And the match between Rollins and Zayn was brilliant. Like the chair being involved, the small package that Rollins won with and talking about how he didn't want to do this. And then of course, Drew McIntyre attacking Sami Zayn at the end. It's just all, it was all so well done. Really like the 2-hour, it was the best 2-hour Raw so far of all, in my opinion. What was weird about it is that everybody was raving about Raw, like how great it was. And usually you're like, oh boy. So then when you watch it, you expect it to kind of not be so great because everyone's setting the bar so high. But, you know, I watched it with an open mind and I was like, no, this shit's actually really fucking good. Two women's matches that had a purpose. Everything had a purpose on the entire show. A lot of heels going up for different things like Raquel and Liv getting the upper hand on Rhea. They really love the corner of the announce table now. Like ever since Braun hit it last week on accident, now it's or maybe hit on the paper. I can't remember. Like they purposely threw Rhea into the corner of the announce table during Raw. it's like the new in thing right now.
Well, we are good at that. When we find a thing,
of course
we gotta run it.
Gotta run it.
But
the New Day, oh my God, dude, the New Day thing. And I saw like parts of it and I saw, I had it all spoiled, but it was perfect. And to see, there's this one guy on Facebook who he plays that very much like, I can't believe they did this. Like why? This makes no sense. Anything that doesn't go how he assumed it would go. It's just like this level of shock.
I truly did intend to watch it, but go ahead and spoil it for me. Tell me what happened.
Yeah. So basically in the New Day promo, they had the whole big celebration set up. Adam Pearce welcomed them out. They had the pictures of all their major accomplishments. They had the gold plate, the old penny tag title sitting there. They had the Bootios, the King of the Ring crown. They had the whole thing. And Woods and Kofi come out and they're doing their thing and they're cutting their promo. And then last week on Raw, they had the huge argument backstage,
right?
Which you had to have seen to really understand.
Kofi kicking the trash can and.
Just really like literally, you know, burying Woods and Woods burying Kofi for everything he did wrong and losing the title in 6 seconds to Brock Lesnar and everything. And so then they do everything like they're happy. They're talking about all the accomplishments of the New Day. And then Kofi's like, we talked and we've made this decision and everyone's obviously expecting him to announce they're going to break up. And then Big E's music starts. And Big E comes out and he's, you know, talking about how, you know, the New Day's amazing and blah, blah, blah. And of course he wrote the Players Tribune article earlier that day, like everything. And he was like, I don't want to see this, and basically insinuating they're going to break up. So he's going to be their manager and he's going to bring them back together. And he's going to do all that. And then Woods and Kofi just turn him and they're just like, where the hell have you been? Like when you got hurt, we were always there for you. And Woods was like, when I tore my knee completely off the bone, I was back in 9 months. And then he's like, yeah, he's like, I broke my neck or whatever. And that's when they were like, I can't remember. I know they listed Edge, but they listed a bunch of other people too, who all broke their neck. They all came back, and of course they're rubbing it in, and then Kofi starts laying in on them. And the best thing is that when Big E tries to go over to them, and Kofi like puts his hand on his chest, and he's just like, no. And there's memes out there that they were like the moment that the dagger went through the heart.
And they kick
Big E out of the New Day. And then they're just like, it's just me and you now. And they do the fist handshake, and they're now solidified as heels, whether they're going to be called the New Day or not. A lot of people are calling it the end of the New Day. I think they'll still call them the New Day because it's marketable. Everyone expected Woods to turn on Kofi. Like, that's what they expected to have happen, not Kofi to end up going heel as well. But that's it, what happened in the end. So at some point, all three are going to be back together, right? This is where we're going. The issue that I think a lot of people had is they expected Woods to break up with Kofi and they would feud or whatever. Not realizing that in typical modern day WWE storytelling, they thought what we were going to see was the end, not the middle. And what happened on Raw, when you go back and watch it, it was decidedly the middle. And so there's more story to come. So I dug the shit out of it. I really did. And some of the criticism online.
Is some of it playlist mentality then too, that they thought it was coming to an end? Yeah.
I think it's playlist mentality. And literally the one complaint that I saw, which is the guy who always complains whenever anything doesn't, poor guy. I mean, God, that's the guy also like for 2 weeks, I'm glad it's finally died down. But for 2 weeks, all he did was post about why he can't believe that Kamala Harris lost the election. Cause he just assumed she was going to win. And so it just doesn't understand how she possibly could have lost. Right. Like anybody could have told you. Got real mad when I commented like, dude, I knew 3 years ago that Trump was going to win. And somebody was like, you couldn't possibly have known that. I was like, well, I did. I could have been wrong, but I wasn't. And then when I'm like, I thought both of them were shit, people just ignore me anyway. Cause now I'm not playing either side. And so they don't even care. But he's just so in shock because, like you said, he was like, but they were obviously building to a breakup. No, they weren't obviously building to a breakup. They were just obviously building to a turning point of some kind, a moment of some kind. And we as fans fill in what we think is going to happen. And because of this desire to be right, which you and I have talked about for years on our podcast, because of this desire to be right, people get shocked when they're wrong. Whereas, you know, I love to be wrong. Like, as you know, unless if it's good, like if what they end up doing is better than what I thought was going to happen, I'll be wrong 7 days a week. Like, I don't care. It's I'm there to be entertained. I kind of wish it hadn't been spoiled for me because I could have enjoyed it a little bit more. But
yeah,
I just wasn't trying to not have it spoiled. So that's on me. But it was just so well done. And I'm excited to see what's next. You know, they didn't attack anybody. They didn't, unless they were the mystery attackers of Jey Uso backstage, which is very possible. Everyone assumes it was Drew McIntyre, just because he then made the return, but it very well could have been the New Day setting up a New Day Usos match in the future, which could be good. Cause again, it's seeing it in a different way. So what?
Well, it just doesn't quite compute to me. I mean, I get the, I don't know. I no longer, this is how far the Usos have come.
Right.
I guess that I no longer see Jey Uso as like being a tag guy more than a one-off sort of thing. Here and there.
Right. Uso himself said it very well in an interview at some point. He loves where the Usos are now because they can be singles or tag. You know, that's
sure.
Again, they consider themselves, and many consider them to be the greatest tag team in the world and possibly the greatest tag team of all time. So why not bust them out on occasion, especially if it to solidify, if you use it to solidify the new heel, New Day. Remember, New Day or Usos laid down for New Day, basically, in the WrestleMania 35 build. They didn't lay down, but they forfeited so that Kofi could go to Kofi Mania and win, you know, win the world title. So I think now with this new heel, New Day, you could see if the Usos are who they put over, who, you know, puts them over, that can solidify them on their way to becoming champions again for the 12th time. But it's like, okay, if you're going to, if you're going to keep the New Day together, what are you going to do, right? How are you going to keep it fresh and relevant? They started off as heels. Most people might not remember that.
Oh, yeah. But it's because we made them face.
Because they were so good. And they were so entertaining. Now, I think, and the great thing, because like, you haven't seen heel Kofi in forever. And Kofi was so good in his promo when he was cutting it on E, and when he was laying in E. He was so good the week before when he was laying in the Woods on Raw, but it was just different. Because Woods, everyone thought, kind of deserved it, right? Because Woods was being the dick. Big E was being the nice guy, trying to keep everybody together. And Kofi tears into him. So Kofi's being the dick. It was just really well done.
A lot of dicks flying around. That's what I'm hearing here.
Yeah, well, it is Triple H booking. So what's going to happen? But the opening with CM Punk and Seth Rollins, especially when Punk's like, you know, basically he's declaring that he wants to win a world championship, and then here comes Seth Rollins. To me, they're building towards Rollins and Punk finally. Like Rollins, and that's the other thing. Everybody was just put in the position to do what they're perfect to do. Like Seth Rollins, as you know, being slighted is so fucking good, because he's like, you know, he hated Punk since the moment Punk returned. Punk wants nothing to do with Rollins because Punk's got his single focus towards the world title. And you could tell, like, Rollins is going to be on this mission to make sure that whatever Punk does, he's going to fail at, right? That's where we're going with Rollins. And Rollins as a menace is just so great. And
right.
And he'll have his supporters.
The great thing about Rollins that, you know, I know his you talk about fluidity between being loved and hated, like, and doing it in such a way to where the crowd, like, I'm going to use Ric Flair as an example. There came a point where Ric Flair could never be truly a heel because no matter what he did, he was going to be loved. The crowd still looks at Seth Rollins as a guy who slides between the two, and they willingly participate in either hating or loving the guy, depending on the flow and the narrative of the story. And I think that's a compliment to what Seth Rollins can do in this role, and especially against a guy like Punk, who can be a foil to that.
Yeah. Because Punk is like the good guy.
Like the thing is Seth Rollins gets to do the ultimate heel thing and kind of being justified in his beef, which I just always appreciate when a heel can be justified.
Yeah. No, that's the crazy thing, is that he is totally justified, like totally justified. It's fantastic. A lot of the heels these days are justified. We're kind of going back to the faces or dicks mentality in wrestling. Like Big E really did go off and do his own thing and enjoy his desk job. And while Woods and Kofi were struggling, and never did show up while Woods and Kofi were struggling, like, he should have been there sooner. Right. And then his excuse was, I was trying to come back. And they're like, and then I think it was Kofi who even said, like, or maybe it was Woods. They basically said, like, stop lying. You're never going to get cleared. And everybody knows it. Like, and you know it too, like, kind of thing. Like, they literally were like you can tell they had full reign to do whatever they wanted. Some of the criticism was like, you could tell they didn't really mean it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you couldn't tell they didn't really mean it. Like, they delivered it perfectly.
That's you projecting.
That's the person who didn't want to believe it. Yeah.
Right.
That's the person who decided it sucked before they saw it.
Right. Like, yeah, that's just stop that. Like, I haven't watched it. You know what? I will watch it just solely based on the positive response. Because I even in the chair shot chat,
yeah,
like, they were going crazy for it. And I tend to stay out of it a lot of times because it just quickly goes into speculation. You know how I feel about speculation.
Yeah. I do know how you feel about speculation, but a really well done episode of Raw is going to lead to tons of speculation. It just is.
It is.
Because it gets people excited.
It's the nature of pro wrestling. I should say, it's not that I don't like speculation. Like, that's not fair. We used to fantasy book all the time. It's going back to the guy that you're mad about. It's the person who's like, no, this is what's going to happen. And blah, 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 da, 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 da. That's what drives me nuts. And we all get that way. We all do.
And when they're in shock that it didn't happen.
Right. Which is why, you know, people like your good friend Patrick now tend to, like, I tune into pay-per-views. Like, I watched Survivor Series. That mask, that Rhea Ripley's mask, that was dope.
It was, and people were complaining about it.
Why were they complaining about it? That thing was fucking dope.
There was this amazing comment that was shared.
Did they want her to wear, like, a basketball mask? Like,
no.
A basketball face mask?
Like, and it was so funny, and it was shared as, like, a look at this idiot kind of way in the group that it was shared in. But basically the person was like, why can't she just look like a normal woman like everyone else? And my comment, which, you know, got the most likes because Greg knows what the fuck he's talking about, was very simply, why look normal in a business where it pays to stand out? Like, Rhea Ripley, and it you know, it'd be different if Candice LeRae showed up wearing that mask. Or it would still stand out, but it wouldn't make as much sense. Like, Rhea Ripley is off the handle all the time. Like, this is who she is, babyface or heel. It's exactly the mask she should wear. And then she took it off at one point, basically to tell Liv Morgan, like, yeah, I'll fight you. I'll fight you without it on. Let's go. So,
can we just back up to that comment in general? Is what
the normal thing?
What was one of the why can't she just look like, basically look like everybody else?
Right.
As you pointed out. What do we complain about all the time when it comes to characters and it comes to look and people, particularly with the women?
What, they're all the same?
Yes. So not like that, I guess, is what they're... We want this, but not like that. Not like
right.
That. Like, what are you... What, and just what are you even talking about, random human being? Like,
yeah, we want someone new. Sheamus wins world title. Well, not that,
right?
Come on.
Anyway,
you asked for it.
What did you think? What did you think of the women's Survivor Series match after it was all said and done? Because I know when we talked about it ahead of time, there was a concern or a feeling that it might feel a little disjointed. In terms of, like, people and just why they were together, I gotta say, I did appreciate, and this is something that I think Triple H has been pretty good at. What you they did a pretty good job of keeping a lot of the narrative threads that people know from history together in different ways, whether it's your damage control moment, whether it's, you know, primarily being about Liv and Rhea, because that is a big part of what we're dealing with right now, is Liv and Rhea. I don't know. I just loved... I got to go. Yeah, going back to Becky and... or not Becky. Oh, I'm sorry.
Raquel and Liv?
No. Bailey.
Oh, okay.
Why did I say Becky? But Bailey and... was it Kyrie or... I'm not Kyrie. Who was in the match, damn it?
Well, Bailey and Io were in the match. They were on the same
Io,
team.
Io, that's right. I was like, Kyrie was not... I knew it wasn't Kyrie. It was Io. But just watching them eyeball each other in the middle of the match, here's what it gave me, Greg. Tito and Rick vibes.
Yeah. Even on SmackDown, when Bailey helped Bianca win to get the advantage in War Games... And then Bianca was cool with Bailey being on the team because Bianca was still trying to decide who was going to be on the team at that point. And Io, to her credit, was campaigning for Kyrie to be on the team, right, as she should. Right. Because that bothered me that only one member of Damage Control was on the team. That made, like, if you're Bianca Belair, you would want Kyrie to be on the team because of the cohesion. Now, Bianca was like, I remember what you guys did to me. Well, fuck, Bailey led that charge against you when she returned.
Right.
But then when Bailey helped her win, that's when Bianca was like, all right. And the fact that Bianca won because Bailey cheated and wasn't upset about it, like, that was kind of cool too, because Bianca has heelish tendencies. I don't think she attacked Jade Cargill. I think that's completely different. I don't know who did. We'll find out eventually, obviously. But or maybe it was her. I don't know. Maybe we'll finally get the Bianca Montez heel run that everybody wants to see. Who knows?
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
But yeah, I like the women's war games. Early I didn't, because the weak-ass, basically, weak-ass chair shots was my problem. Like, yeah. If you're going to hit somebody with a chair, you hit them with the chair. And wrestlers will even tell you, like, they'd rather get someone swing hard and fast and hit them square versus, yeah, it was just like, the swings were bad. It's like, no way does that hurt, like, ever. And
Can I also just point out, and I know that weapons aren't unheard of in war games,
right?
But it did drive me nuts that, particularly in the women's, every single person comes out of their cage and the first thing they do is go to the ring apron to find their prop.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like, you know what? At this point, we all know the props are coming. Just go ahead and put them in the cage.
Right.
Like, they've done it with weapons, other weapons cage matches where there are already weapons in the ring. Like, well, just go ahead and put them in.
If you're going to do it for something like this, you don't have everybody do it. Like, the multicolored trash can, like, okay, it was cool. It was, you know, that the little shoulder strap so she could climb up the cage with it was great. But, like,
and I did like her starting. Well, she didn't start with that spot. She set it up to start with and then did it later.
Right.
I actually thought she should have started with it because just get out of the way.
Was she wasn't last, right? She wasn't last for her team. That was, she was like in the middle or so.
Yeah, she was like second or third for her team. Yeah.
But that should have, to me, that should have been like one of maybe two weapons that got grabbed out from under that ring apron.
At this point, the expectation's been set.
But I hate it. And that's okay. Like, it's okay that the expectations has been set, but it, to me, like, kind of what you're saying, just rip it off from TNA and call it Monsters Ball. You know, do Monsters Ball.
Right.
Just throw that shit in there. Because, like, it got comical a little bit. You know, okay, my turn. Do. And then, who couldn't find it right away?
Yeah, I can't remember, but there was someone who looked in multiple places and then just finally said fuck it and got in the ring. So yeah, there was that. So
that was bothersome. And
that's definitely your playlist though, because they, at this point, if they were to go away from the weapons, I think people would be upset by it. So
I'm not saying go away from the weapons. I'm saying every single person.
Well, it wasn't every single person. If you go back and watch, it was probably like five or six of them. It was the majority. It was more than half. I'll say that.
Yeah, I was going to say it was enough to where it got to. It was enough to be like, come on now. Come on. Like, it started with the kendo stick. It's fine.
But then it's cool when they don't grab the weapon. I did like Liv coming out, and because Liv was the last one in for her team.
Right.
And leaving, like literally turning around and walking out, and then getting the baseball bat and coming in.
Yes,
that was another complaint I saw. Special. It was. And it didn't come from under the ring. It came from the back. Another complaint that I saw was that Rhea looked too strong. That Rhea shouldn't have been able to overcome a beating by five people the way she did. And they were like, it just makes her just like Batista and Triple H and John Cena and Hulk Hogan. And I'm like, yes, that's the point. Like, be happy they're finally booking a woman this way. It's taken them three decades to get to this point. Be happy.
And here's my counter to the person who doesn't like strong style Superwoman Rhea Ripley. The other way to book that people used to complain about, the Even Stevens booking, the more realistic booking.
Right.
What is it doing for viewership right now over on the other channel?
Nothing. Because wins and losses matter. Or wins and losses don't matter until they matter. Which is why I love the Continental Classic in AEW. And here we go. The Continental Classic just started. And guess what? I'm watching for the Continental Classic matches. Because they
like
make
a tournament too, though. Like,
and it's not overdone. Like, it's not like the G1 where you've got to watch for like 2.5 months. It's their miniature version of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's basically their G1.
Oh yeah.
Is what I
Yeah, they made it for Daniel Bryan Danielson so that he, because he couldn't do the G1, so they made it for him so he could have his G1. But it's been the best thing AEW's ever done, in my opinion. So, you know, other than the Ricky Starks Chris Jericho feud and the Ricky Starks MJF feud, like the Jericho one was better because Starks would always get the upper hand and then won. But the Continental Classic is just because they figured out, because again, like I've said, AEW should be ripping off the UFC's presentation anyway. And the Continental Classic is the closest thing to that because they make wins and losses matter. They haven't been able to do it with the win-loss records. They haven't been able to do it with the rankings. They've started and stopped that shit so many times. They'll probably restart it again the first year like they always do and then abandon it by March like they always do. But the Continental Classic works perfectly. Now, no one will seem to respond to my tweet asking Tony Khan when the Women's Continental Classic is going to start. Because that's silly because you'd have to have three women's matches per program. That's never going to happen in AEW. Because the only person who hates booking women more than Triple H is Tony Khan. So that's, you know, neither here nor there. But I love the Continental Classic because they're making wins and losses matter, which is so difficult to do. I think even Steven somewhat works in the mid-card just because you're keeping people relevant and moving them up. But you need people who are dominant. And not only that, but like, right. Would you rather see Rhea Ripley be the plucky underdog? It doesn't even make sense. She's bigger and stronger than almost everybody.
Right.
Yeah, like it just, anybody who throws a powerful headbutt can't be a plucky underdog.
Face Liv Morgan can be the plucky underdog.
Exactly. Hell, heel Liv Morgan is the plucky underdog. Like,
well,
and it works for her.
She's the honky talk man. That's what she is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny because honestly, in all seriousness, her and her on-screen boyfriend are both the honky talk man. Like, yes, Dom Mysterio, so. The only thing he's lacking is a championship, but he is the honky tonk man.
It's rhythm and blues.
Right? One's got dark hair, one's got blonde hair. It's the whole thing. We've seen Jimmy Hart, and that's Raquel Rodriguez. I will say this, going back to Raw. The Gunther versus Dominic Mysterio match was so perfectly done. Save for setting it up with a promo in the ring. And if it was a 3-hour Raw, they would have. But they set it up in a promo backstage. Both main event matches on Raw, Dominic versus Gunther and Rollins versus Sammy, were set up during the show. And that doesn't always happen nowadays.
Yeah.
And it never happens in AEW. They just announce all the matches and have them. But, and that's, people like that. That's fine. Let them. But I loved the whole backstage interaction where Finn Balor's like, you know, you owe me a shot because I helped you beat Damian Priest. And Gunther being like, I didn't want anybody to help me beat Damian Priest. I wanted to beat him myself. And then him saying, you don't deserve a shot at me. He does because he's actually beaten Damian Priest. And then Gunther goes to Pierce and says, I want to defend against Dominic. And the crowd actually got behind Dominic a little bit. Because it's, again, what happens to the best heels? They start to get cheered because people love them. Because of their performance. Yeah. Edge was the one. Kevin Owens has been that before. Hell, John Cena.
John Cena was a heel.
Yeah.
To start.
Exactly.
In many ways.
And kept being a heel even when he was a babyface. Kept doing heel things. Hulk Hogan was a heel even when
Steve
he was a
babyface.
Steve Austin. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, come on.
The Rock. Like,
it's amazing. But Attitude Era is hard. Like, yeah, it is what it is. But they were starting to cheer for Dom. And it's because he was... You know, he was out there doing his thing, and they liked it.
By the way, I'm assuming you've hit the button.
Oh God, yeah, 27 minutes ago.
So welcome to the Greg DeMarco Show.
Everybody. Oh, they know what they're listening to.
You're on the Chair Shot Radio Network, in front of the show. But I feel like we should get it out there.
No, we don't need to. Fast forward. Planetary, intergalactic. It's you, Patrick O'Dowd, straight punk bitch.
Straight punk bitch.
I mean, yep. You're just going to replace me.
I never did replace you at all. That's a joke. She's not really the biggest slut in the Western. She had to have the buzzer because she would talk forever. We all know that. I am an asshole. Yes, it's my show. That's Heather Lynn. She really does love me.
She does love
you. You're welcome.
You've seen it in action. Like, she does love me. Now here comes this, and then I'll interrupt it. There we go. Or I'll say this.
Acknowledge me.
Or I'll do this.
Bitch.
Or I'll do this.
Awesome.
I came to.
Okay.
And here we are. We're having a podcast. So
there you go.
That was the best 2 minutes a podcast has ever had right there. That was good. That was shit.
Just wall to wall sound.
It was just balls to the wall.
Such good shit. Speaking of sound bites that from yesterday
or on the old computer. Yeah, I need
days of our.
Oh
my goodness.
Yeah.
So okay, where were we?
So here's where we are. Right, we've talked a little bit about Raw. Damn good show. If you haven't watched it, don't take it from me. Go out there and watch it. Just sit down. If you're listening to me right now and you're like, Greg's wrong, Raw sucked, don't go watch it. Because if you think it's going to suck when you watch, it's going to suck. If you think it's going to be great when you watch, it's going to be great. Trust me, it happens to the 500,000 people that watch Dynamite every week. If you just go down and you want to be entertained, then you'll figure it out whether it was good or whether it was bad. Again, like I said, I am watching Dynamite now because of the Continental Classic. I still didn't watch Collision or Rampage because of the Continental Classic, but I watched Dynamite because of the Continental Classic and thought it was very, very well done. They kind of are already doing some big matchups early, like the winners are kind of facing each other already in round two. But yeah,
so if you win the Continental Classic, is it like winning the G1? In the sense that you go onto the Tokyo Dome to challenge. No, just kidding.
No, the Continental Classic winner gets the Continental Championship. So Eddie Kingston won last year, became the Continental Champion, lost it to Okada. Now last year he also won the Ring of Honor title and the New Japan Strong title. Yeah, but those were never fully merged. So the thing has always been whoever holds it is then in the Continental Classic the next year. And you know, it's, you know, I kind of wish he was defending it in every single match, but he's not. So basically if he doesn't make it to the finals, he just automatically loses the title and whoever. I actually, believe it or not, and you know, I hope he wins Okada just because, he went to a draw in his first match with Daniel Garcia because they're both champions. Because Daniel Garcia is now the TNT champion because fuck Jack Perry, I guess. I don't know. We built Jack Perry and now we don't care because that's Tony Khan for you. But I would love for Okada to win just because I would love for the sitting champion to actually win and keep his title. And then maybe lose it shortly after that just for the irony of it all. But because he still then defends it as a champion throughout the year. But it's just kind of that. And that's been done elsewhere around the world at lower levels in the past where you hold a title. You win a title in a tournament. You hold it till the next year's tournament. And then you're in the tournament and you have to win the tournament to keep it. Like that's happened. But I like it. Again, it's the best thing AEW has ever done.
To ask a question, so and then what with whoever wins?
They're just a champion. Defend that title. Yeah.
So if you're the champion,
uh-huh.
So like, you know, you said Kingston won it, then you still defend it.
As a champion, yeah.
And then you have to defend it in a tournament every year where like people from everywhere can go in and be a part. Or like you're picked or something. I'm sure there's a method to the madness.
I don't know how they selected who's in it because they just randomly announced it. They could put more into that, but I'm cool with it. It's definitely, you know, upper mid-carders, and lower card guys. Like, it is what it is. But yeah, you whoever wins it, like Eddie Kingston did, he won it. He held all three titles. He defended them all separately, though. And then he eventually loses the Continental Championship to Okada, and then has a broken leg and is going to be out for a year, whatever. And then Okada has been defending it.
As the champion, who still has it.
Right. Has been defending it as a defending champion.
Right. No, well, it's just an interesting concept because it is different from your typical sort of title reign.
Right? Yeah.
Like,
it's just a wrinkle that's thrown into the title reign.
Basically, he's defending it, but he's in a tournament.
That he has to win to keep it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, like, annually you have to go through the gauntlet.
Right. It's like right now, right? They just started the Women's Intercontinental Championship tournament. Imagine whoever wins it, say it's Lyra Valkyria. If they redo the tournament again next year.
But there won't be another Intercontinental tournament
unless
to defend that champion or to have to like redo, right. You know, go through the tournament. So that's where I'm like, it's different. It's different than. Now I don't know if it's different than in a way that I like.
Right.
Personally, but I at least understand like, I understand how it works, and it's definitely different.
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely different. And like I said, I've enjoyed it and I look forward to it. I do think they should do a women's, but hey, the problem is too, like, they have a million tournaments, right? They're going to do the Owen Hart thing that they do every year. And they're going to do, they got the Battle Royal for the Ring that they do every year. Like, there's all these different things that they do.
Yeah. I will say it's an interesting stake that's different than you get a Royal Rumble tournament where you just get a shot at the world champion or champion of your choice or whatever, which is generally with these big time tournaments, that's what the company does, whether it's, the briefcase sort of deal where it's not a tournament, but it's, Money in the Bank or Feast or Fired or Option C even.
Right.
Royal Rumble winner. Like, generally these things are, it's always to lead to a title shot at the champion, which is also an interesting logic when you really think about it, in the world of wrestling, like the anything can happen sort of deal. This doesn't give you that in the form of a shot. It gives you a title, but then it also throws you back into it if you successfully defend that title for a year. So what kind of stories can you tell with that? Getting closer to tournament
cut. I mean, you can obviously, you've got Okada, right? That's a story right there. You got Okada and Daniel Garcia in the same group, and they're both singles champions right now since Daniel Garcia is a TNT champion. So you can set up future challengers by having somebody beat him, all of that. You've got Shelton Benjamin in one. I think that's a great story that you can tell with him because he's, never been viewed as a top guy, and so it's his fight to do that. I love that Claudio's in one of them because he's just kind of a great a great tournament wrestler, in my opinion, to have in there. You have your lower card guys. Like last year, Mark Briscoe was one that people really latched onto during the tournament. Juice Robinson just got hurt, so Commander is taking his place. And Commander does nothing but flippy shit matches, but now he's in something that has stakes to it. And that's fun. They changed something this year where first place in the blue league wrestle second place in the gold league in one semifinal, and then first place in the gold or second place in the blue in the other semifinal. That's a new wrinkle they've added in this year. Last year they did some of that because one of the groups ended in a tie, and so they had to have like a tiebreaker match and all of that. Like last year, Swerve was the obvious winner, and then Kingston came out of nowhere at the end. Like he beats Daniel Bryan Danielson in his last match to get to the finals, and then I think he beats like John Moxley or something. I don't know. I have to go back and look. I'm pretty sure it was Moxley. Like it just gives a it's rare on Dynamite to see the same wrestlers 5 weeks in a row or any of the shows. And so it really puts this focus on these 12 guys, these 12 wrestlers. And again, it just makes wins and losses matter. So you can weave some stories in and out of it. Okada being the sitting champion is obviously another story you can tell, especially maybe he loses in the semifinals. And so now it's like you just lost your title by losing in the semifinals. And then the person who beats him loses in the finals. So it's like the guy who beat you didn't even get to be champion. So there's a lot you can do with it. So I praise the hell out. Like when I was hearing, they talked about format changes. And I was like, oh, like format changes are me or like when the Bound for Glory series stopped having everybody wrestle everybody. Like that was then it just, I was like, if you're going to do something where there's like cross bracket, I'm the guy who doesn't think that Major League Baseball should have interleague play. So obviously I don't want cross bracket anything in the Continental Classic, but the only change they made was how the semifinals and finals are going to take place. And they're all at World's End. So the semifinals happen earlier in World's End, the finals later in World's End. I would put, if it were me, I would make the finals the main event of World's End. Like, supposedly the world title match is going to be a four-way. Like, if you really want this thing to matter, you put the finals in the main event. Cards already built, cards already sold. So, unless, like, some shitty person's going to win and you don't want people to see it, but then why are you booking it that way? On a company that really wants wins and losses to matter, it's the only time it actually fucking happens. So, and I'm down.
So you just talked about all these possibilities. Do you have the faith in them to do anything with this?
Yeah, they did it last year.
After the tournament's done.
Once the tournament was over last year. No, I don't know about the then what. But the tournament itself is so good, I don't really care about the then what, believe it or not. And here's the other thing, too.
Like a tournament, though.
But not only that, I also know I'm not going to keep watching after the tournament's over. Because I don't. Like, history has shown that I watch Here's a Dynamite I watch, right? I go to the one in Phoenix, and then I watch it on replay to see how it comes off. If they're pushing someone like crazy, like a Ricky Starks or whatever, I'm going to tune in just to watch that stuff. When before Adam Cole was the Adam Cole of today, when he first came in AEW and he was still the NXT Adam Cole, I wasn't missing anything he did, especially when they returned and attacked the Bucks and seemed like they were off to the races and then everybody got hurt. And then the Continental Classic. And when Samoa Joe was world champion, I was watching his matches. And I would tune in for Swerve title matches and Swerve's rise, like the feud with Hangman, all that I watched. So there are reasons that I'll tune in and reasons that I'll watch. What's interesting is that most of that stuff happened earlier in the year. Joe's title reign, Swerve's rise, all that happened earlier in the year. And then Sting retired, the Bucks became Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, and I just stopped giving a shit until the Continental and MJF started screaming again, and then the Continental Classic brought me back in. So I don't know if I'm going to keep watching after the Continental Classic, but I know I'm going to watch the Continental Classic. So
yeah, it didn't get me to start watching. So
no, I won't, and that's fine. It doesn't need to. So
I definitely did have one of those moments though when I was reading about it this year. Which one? Here's how little I know about this fucking company. Didn't know it was the second tournament. was like, oh, so it's just as you pointed out, it's just the G1, huh? Except with fewer people. I was like, right. Okay. Like, literally, was like, okay. And again, didn't even know there was a title associated, just assumed it was to build a contender for the championship.
Right. Which is fine. I'm fine with that aspect, too, just because they have a million other tournaments that usually lead to somebody challenging for a championship. Like, right. Again, even CM Punk during his Raw promo was like, I want to win a world title at WrestleMania. There's two ways to get there. Win the Royal Rumble or win Elimination Chamber. And I'm like, how about have a fucking feud? Like, I hate that our WrestleMania title matches are all determined that way. I just do. I'm going to lose that argument forever. It doesn't matter. But I really wish a feud actually built.
I agree with you. The WrestleMania main event. I agree with you with the feud side of it. Like, it's also what makes the Royal Rumble somewhat predictable. It's also what makes...
I'm cool with the Rumble. I'm cool with the Rumble determining two of the challengers. Because they have two men's world titles and two women's world titles. So the Rumble can take care of two of those four matches. Give me feuds for the others. That's why the Rumbles were obvious this year. The Elimination Chamber matches were obvious this year because... You knew like they just booked those matches to support the existing feuds.
Right.
We didn't need Elimination Chamber this year. Like, we could have done a different pay-per-view in Australia, headlined by Rhea Ripley. We didn't need, you know, it would have been a better story for Drew McIntyre to lose the Elimination Chamber because everybody thought he was going to win. And you got to remember, the road to WrestleMania 41 was when I was at the height of my banging the table about I hate all the paint-by-numbers booking that they were doing. Now they're not. So hopefully they stay away from the paint-by-numbers booking with WrestleMania 41. Like, give me Braun Breaker win the Royal Rumble. Like, just do something crazy. Right now, everybody thinks it's going to be CM Punk. Hopefully Seth Rollins costs him in the Royal Rumble, and that allows somebody surprising to win the Rumble. Remember how excited we were when Sheamus won the Royal Rumble? Or when Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble? Like, we jumped out of our seats at Hooters when Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble. Yeah.
We were at a Hooters when Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble.
Exactly. Like, we were so excited because Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble. Like, it was different. You know, it wasn't obvious. This year's Bayley winning the Royal Rumble, like, anybody could have told you that was going to happen this past year. Like, it was just too obvious. So we need not obvious, right? If Rhea Ripley wins the Royal Rumble so she can challenge Liv Morgan, like, no. I want, again, playlist, I want Rhea Ripley versus Dominic Mysterio at WrestleMania. Like, that to me is a money match. And it's just 10 minutes of Dominic getting the shit beat out of him. And then, of course, somebody interferes to try to save him. And then Rhea goes over in the end. Like, that's what I want to see. Will I? I don't know. Who knows? Like, we'll find out when we get there. I won't be shocked and complain. I might complain about that one if it doesn't happen. But I won't be too shocked to complain. Just because it's really on my playlist. All right. We're going to go to commercial. And we're going to come back and talk about something totally different.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, folks. PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code ChairShot to save 10%. That's AngryLemonade.net.
Many a year ago, I took Patrick O'Dowd to his first ever Monday Night Raw. And we went to Monday Night Raw at the Mohegan Sun Arena in what WWE would call Mohegan Sun, Connecticut, which is really Uncasville, Connecticut. Yes. And we saw CM Punk wrestle his dark match. We went through the whole episode of Raw. And then when Raw ended, we got this unannounced main event that started a little something like this. I really just need to give some love real quick here. I'm going to rewind this. Can we just have some love for the cow mooing in the background of this song? Here comes. Why is there a cow? Like, yeah. I just love that shit. Like, it's so fucking good.
He was from Texas.
Right? He was from Texas. He had the bullhorns on the
steers.
Level.
Steers out there.
So Raw ends and immediately fucking JBL's theme song hits and JBL comes out. And then Batista's theme song hits and Batista comes out. And remember, entire episode of Raw, biggest pyro of the night was Batista, the dark match.
Pyro, yeah.
And we get the Batista pyro. What really shocked me was this was back when Raw was on Monday and SmackDown was on Tuesday. So SmackDown had a house show that night and didn't have JBL and Batista. That should have been the SmackDown house show main event. But instead, we got it on Raw, and it was basically them like practicing their pay-per-view match they were going to have.
Right.
And we were like, what the fuck is JBL and Batista? Like, they didn't tell us it was going to be that. It just all of a sudden happened. Like I think Tony Chimmel was even like, don't leave yet. We got a match. And then next thing you know, it's fucking JBL and Batista.
Cows mooing.
Cows are mooing, and then someone's walking alone. I don't know if he was walking alone yet at that point. It might have just been the one without the music at that point. But so we got to see JBL and Batista in their dark match. The reason why I bring it up, Patrick, is because you and I have been talking privately about the absolute joy that is something to wrestle with John Bradshaw Layfield. And I hope that everyone is listening to this, because here's the thing. I know a lot of people can't fucking stand JBL. I really do. Like, you see it online. I think they just think he's a Bible thumping Trump supporter, and maybe he is, but like the political video he put out was hilarious when he put the one he put out before the election, like that was amazing. I could listen to JBL talk for days. It's just been the best thing ever for me.
Yeah. I think what I said to you in one of the texts is that I really, so this is part of the Conrad Thompson family of podcasts.
Of course.
Obviously. Conrad's the host. Russell with Bruce Pritchard was, you know, he's filling in for Bruce while Bruce is going through whatever he's going through. And I think I just said something along the lines of this was something that Conrad's network needed in terms of content, because like when we first started listening to these other podcasts, and I don't care that I'm on a different network talking about a podcast network that doesn't care about us, like I was all in. I was four episodes deep or four shows deep listening to 83 Weeks, Something to Wrestle With, Grill and JR, Arn. Mm-hmm. And even for a little while, What Happened When, but that was such a watch along show that I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
I just
can't do it.
And
that's still a show. That still happened. Yeah. Is Tony Schiavone one still a thing? I'm assuming it is.
Yeah, but I don't know what the. I stopped listening to it. So, and all four of those other shows that I just named, I've lost interest in most of them. I stopped listening to Arn entirely. Because one, Arn didn't want to talk about the WWE and his role as an agent, because he just didn't. I don't think he remembered it very well, to be honest. He just wanted to kind of talk about his days wrestling. So that's fine. And Conrad doesn't even host it anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
The same thing with sorry, what were the four? Grill and JR. Grill and JR just quit because it became unlistenable.
Yeah, I listened to a few and then I was like, I'm good here.
And unless it, like, I still get the episodes because every once in a while you'll get something from his, you know, days with Cowboy or like the old school stuff that is really
right.
Why I would care to listen to a podcast from JR. Pritchard's I would listen to somewhat regularly, but even those, he's been around and they've been doing that podcast for so long that much of what they talk about now, unless it's about a talent like passing away, unfortunately, most of what they talk about, he's talked about on previous episodes, like at other times, because he's just, they've talked about it for so long. And Bischoff's show has, for the most part, become at least an hour of listening to Conrad set Eric up to dunk on AEW.
It's just because I think Eric is done talking about the fun stuff. I really do. I think they've covered it all.
And this past week, was the episode that was kind of like the final. They finally gave up all pretense because it was literally just about like what can save AEW or something. And, you know, Bischoff, of course, he stirred everybody up because he said something like that. I don't like none of those podcasts are compelling or interesting or telling stories or what the show originally was. And so to have JBL come on and he's done an episode completely dedicated to talking about Bruce. He's done an episode completely dedicated to talking about The Undertaker. He's done an episode completely dedicated to talking about Eddie Guerrero. And this week he talked about John Cena. And next week he's going to talk about his best friend, Ron Simmons. And it's just one, it's great to hear his perspective because it's all about his work with them. So he's not doing like he didn't do like a retrospective on John Cena's career. He's talked about his experience work with Cena. And it just the way he talks about wrestling and the business and his experience to hear that he didn't think he was going to last 2 months coming up. To learn, you know, sort of the level of trust. You know, if you listen to I think it's the Undertaker episode where they take a couple of turns that you don't expect where, you know, he talks about, you know, Chris Benoit and Owen, just hearing like, again, just his perspective and what his role and the conversation he says that he and Taker had with Vince in the wake of Benoit's death would be like,
yeah, where JBL was like, wait, what if he did it? Like it was JBL who was like, what if Chris did it? And Vince was like, what do you want me to do? And he was like, I don't know. I'm just saying, what if he, like, it's so interesting because you always hear about the stories about how Triple H was in production meetings before he was ever dating Stephanie. Like Vince just knew that Triple H was going to be the guy to take over this thing years before anybody else did. Cause that's what Vince always did. Like, I feel like JBL was kind of that person. They were always like, he's eventually going to be a locker room dude and all this other stuff. Like, even before JBL ever knew it. That's just the vibe that I get from all of that. And yeah, listening to JBL tell those stories. And he's a great storyteller. And I think that's part of what, you know, like, that's why I could never get into the Tony Schiavone one. Because it's just not, he's not entertaining to me. And Conrad, like with Eric, like Conrad is just trying to tee shit up to get putt press. That's all it is. With the JBL one, I think Conrad's actually enjoying the conversation. And so it's different. He's not trying to stir up JBL because he doesn't have to. It makes me want to go back and listen to the stories with Briscoe and Bradshaw. I haven't yet, and I probably won't until JBL's run on this is done. Although my gut instinct is that if Bruce comes back, that Conrad and JBL will start some other show because of the reception that this has received.
I do also legitimately wonder where Bruce is with his time in the show and now with these other complications. Like, just realistically, it's like, if he could be looking for an exit.
He could be done. Yeah, he could be done with the podcast. Right. The only reason he stayed on the podcast after going back to WWE is because that thing was apparently making Bruce like $500,000 a year. And it's just hard to turn that away. regard, you know, despite what he's making in WWE. Like, I'm pretty sure when he went back to WWE, he was like, I'll come back, but I'm going to keep doing the podcast. Like, if you don't want me to do the podcast, I can make plenty of money and not have to get on a plane and go to TV every week. And Bruce, to his credit, if you think about how busy that guy is, he still finds a way to be pretty damn entertaining
and he makes good podcasts.
Yeah, it's not like the episodes, like there's still some, there's not the four and a half hour long episodes like they did.
Yeah, the marathons are done, but
Bruce, and so if he wants to stop, he will, and JBL will just take over. If Bruce does come back, but Bruce strikes me as the kind of guy who might be like, I think you're good, Conrad. Like, I think you're good with JBL. Like, I could see Bruce doing that and being like, don't even change the name. Like, keep the name, something to wrestle with, JBL, like, you know, John Layfield. Like,
I just wish you would stop doing the, like, I'm all confused thing. It was funny one time. I'm like, okay, drop it now. Just call it what it is.
Well, to JBL's, not credit, but defense, I don't think he knows how to start the show. It's like...
You mean Conrad's defense? Because Conrad's the one who's kicking the show off. You know, like,
yeah, but even even with the last episode with John Cena, JBL's like, yeah, they haven't fired me yet. Like, it's just kind of like, you know, doesn't know what to say.
He's been in it for 4 weeks, and they have very much established it as a temporary thing right now. And so I get the joke. It's a dad joke. But it's a good listen. I agree with you. Like, that's a show that I actually, on my Apple podcast, because that's what I use, because I have an iPhone. It's, you know, the Marcus plate option gets used frequently.
Yeah.
When it comes to that network of podcasts now, because I still
the unsubscribe option gets used often for me.
I've unsubscribed from everybody I don't want to hear from, and then it's picking and choosing the topic. It's like seeing what Bischoff's going to talk about that day and being like, oh, okay, I'll listen to that. Because I do think that, you know, like I think they watched an ECW pay-per-view too long ago, and just his reaction to that was kind of fun. They've done some watch-along episodes. They are venturing into other things. It's getting past the first hour of the podcast where we have to talk about AEW when it's the same song written over and over and over again.
Like, I remember back in the day, one of the early episodes of, I think it happened with both Eric Bischoff and Bruce Pritchard at some point, where they flat out told Conrad, like, no more Dave Meltzer. And Conrad was like, then we can't do the show anymore, because that's where I get all my information from. Yeah. It's like, I dare Conrad. And there have been times where Meltzer archives didn't contain certain windows of time, so he had to go to the torch. I would pay money for Conrad to have to do an episode with Eric Bischoff and not bring up AEW. Like, he can't do it. Like, he would, like, if it was a bet, he would lose 20-1. Like, he would just lose his money. And that's like, just like, do an episode without bringing up AEW with Eric Bischoff, do an episode with, you know, Bruce Pritchard, JBL, without bringing up Dave Meltzer. Like, do it. I dare you.
And even JBL's comments about Meltzer, I thought were really, really interesting. Cause he was like, I mean, apparently he doesn't like me. Cause they were talking about, I can't remember what match it was, but he just kind of called out the lunacy of the write-up, because the write-up was like, this match is terrible, but the crowd loved it.
The entire crowd into the match, but the match was terrible. Like,
and Layfield was like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Because people don't understand. Dave Meltzer's just telling you his personal opinion on the match, and everyone is reading it as the gospel, and that's their fault, not Dave Meltzer's fault. Because Meltzer literally, I've seen him say, like, it's just my opinion. And everyone ignores that because, to Meltzer's credit, other websites literally report on his star ratings.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what do you want the guy to do? I hate him. I can't stand him. But when it comes to the star ratings and everything, what do you want him to do? Other websites report on the news he spews. They turn the speculation into news. It makes him money. Like, he doesn't have to have a real job. He's been doing it since the 90s. He's been doing it since we were in high school. Like... What do we want the guy to do? Like, I just don't understand. I am still subscribed. The thing is, see, I use iHeart, right? So I'm subscribed, right, but I have downloads turned off, right? So nothing gets like, and I don't have notifications turned on. So literally, I just go when I see the list of six podcasts that I'm subscribed to. 83 Weeks is one, but I haven't listened in months. Our Network is one. Joe Rogan is one I haven't listened in months. I guess I was listening to this podcast called What Went Wrong. Did you turn me on to that maybe?
Yeah, that's the movie one. I love that podcast.
Yeah, I've listened to a couple of episodes and that's it. I did subscribe.
I'm trying to get the nerds to listen. So I'm sorry, I'm going to take you on a different journey real quick. The last two episodes that they did was a two-part episode about the making of the Star Wars, The Phantom Menace.
Yep, I see that.
The bandwagon nerds need to listen to those two episodes. It really turned some stuff that like I didn't even know happened with some of the actors that were involved in that, and like the little kid that played Anakin, apparently he's suffering from like schizophrenia.
Oh wow.
And was like incarcerated, like his life turned really hard.
Child anyway, star.
It's there's some interesting research. They do a good job of researching some stuff and shoot down urban legends. They shoot down Dave Meltzer's just in movies. And they don't do it in a snarky way. They are pretentious movie people. And I that shines through every now and again, but that's just what it is now though when it comes to podcasts and content.
Yeah.
In general, and wrestling podcasts. Like Greg, I listen to I've confessed this. I make this joke all the time. I've not listened to many podcasts on our own network.
Right.
Like, one, we put out a podcast a day, and that's a lot of podcasts. And two, like, we put out so much it's so much content, and a lot of it is content I'm not keeping up with.
I totally get that.
It becomes irrelevant.
But we'll stop letting you bury our network, and we'll talk about something else.
No, I'm not going to bury the network. The network's great, and people love it. Congratulations to the Attitude of Aggression podcast just hit their 300th episode. Like, that's awesome. And it's great that people listen to it. I just can't. I don't have time.
I get that. No, I totally get that. Especially since COVID hit and I started working from home. Like, commuting was always when I would listen to everything. So yeah,
that's when I listen.
Now it's a lot more different. Now it's a lot more difficult. And then I got back into working out with music instead of podcasts, which does make a difference in my opinion.
Rhythm and beat, 1,000%.
But I will say this, it's a lot easier to work out to a JBL podcast than any other podcast because the energy the dude has. And that's where, that's to his credit. I want to see how old he is. JVL's 58 years old.
Yeah.
Like, looks damn. Like, and sounds amazing. Like, it's just so, I didn't realize. I thought
Have you stayed up to date? Have you listened to this week's yet?
I am on the John Cena episode now.
Okay. Yeah.
I listened to the Undertaker one, and then I'm on the John Cena one.
There's a great story about his wife and her reactions to his life in the wrestling world that I just found
okay. Haven't gotten to that one yet. How far am I into the John Cena episode?
Let's see here.
I am. It's loading. I am 72 out of 130 minutes into the John Cena episode.
Yeah, it's on the back end there because it's in the later part of his career. When he's talking about the later part of his career. Okay. I want to bring something. I don't know if this was on the podcast because I don't know when you actually hit record.
We're talking about wrestling when I hit record. Let me do this before you do that.
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes and we're out of here. The clock is ticking and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes and we're out of here. We got.
Bitch.
Okay, now let me do this. You do this.
Oh, there's not another do this? Now that I've let you do this, I can do this?
No, you said let me do this, so I said so do this.
Oh, so my question, as we talk about how great John Bradshaw Layfield is, and we should have done this as a list. Five wrestling, like our wrestling personalities that we would have been to do the next podcast.
So you mean like the next something to wrestle?
Like who... who else would we want to hear?
Okay.
Those well,
let's table that and now do we have that to
table because I was like, next week. Oh shit, like that.
Because we're an hour and 10 minutes into the program, so we're not going to suddenly start a list.
Who would be your next? Who would be your next person you'd want to hear from? And then I was like, wait a minute, we should just do a list. Should be a list. My bad.
We'll save it. I will say this. I will give this caveat now. I'm probably not going to pick anybody who already has a podcast, but I haven't been inclined to listen to. And there's a lot of those people. Because, like, why would I say Kurt Angle when I never listened to his podcast anyway? So obviously I don't think it's that great. And people haven't raved about it to the point where I had to check it out, right? Jeff Jarrett, you would think it'd be amazing on a podcast. Never heard a single episode of his podcast. Yeah. So I don't know. But I actually would very much enjoy that topic and want to give it some thought.
This is going to be a challenging topic because of what you just said, because everybody has a fucking podcast now.
Right. But I think it's going to offer some interesting twists and turns. I'm assuming... because it would be a different topic. Oh, I'm gonna put it, even though it's not my list, I'm going to request a rule. Okay. At the end of the day, it's your decision. They have to be living.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we can't be like Rowdy
Nick
Piper.
Nick Bockwinkle will not.
We could do that as a separate list, right? Who's no longer with us that we wish had a podcast, right? That could be its own green list.
That's the answer. That's the only
thing. Well, remember when I sent you that guy who did the like Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon podcast? Like he used AI, like it was so amazing. And then when like he would threw in like Conrad Thompson, and he's like, "Chat me up a little bit, Bobby." Like it was just so good. I gotta like scroll back through our because he stopped doing it, obviously. But
yeah,
and it was in our DMs from like a year and a half ago, so I'm never gonna find it. But it's just such good shit. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that would be interesting to listen to. And yeah, it's good time. We'll save it. We'll save it and we'll do it. We'll save it for the podcast, even though we're on the podcast. We'll save it for a different podcast.
Next podcast. But
it will be interesting. Never mind. I'm not going to say what I was about to say. I don't want to get into because I talked about the rule and just, you know, again, I don't listen to certain podcasts. And so I wouldn't put those people on the list, but yeah. We'll leave that. So there we go. So good question, Patrick O'Dowd. We will have to venture into that as we get into the coming weeks. And I think it'll be interesting. But good shit for JBL. Good shit for Monday Night Raw for the Survivor Series. What did you think of... We talked about... You asked what I thought about the women's Survivor Series match. What did you think about the men's Survivor Series match? And basically, you know... The new bloodline kind of not getting buried, but you could say that they did. I don't know.
So it goes down to, again, what was the story that they were really telling? And the story was Roman getting his, you know, and the OGs getting theirs. And
then
the
Punk.
CM Punk factor.
Yeah.
It's the CM Punk factor. It was the story about CM Punk and Roman Reigns from hand in front of him at one point.
Yes, like, and he was instead of having Sammy go out,
like all of that was built.
That's another great moment from the Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn argument when Rollins is like, "You teamed with CM Punk," and Sami Zayn being like, "Do you think I wanted a team with CM Punk? I wanted you. You said no twice. What was I supposed to do?" Like it was just, you know,
yeah.
It was good because it all made logical sense. And I know I preach, stop trying to apply logic to an illogical situation, but it was a situation where logic, that was a situation where wrestling became a reality show in a good way. And really, again, I get, you know, record it so you can fast forward the commercials and whatever, but like, you know, I can't say a single bad thing about Raw. Karrion Kross had a backstage promo. That's it. Everything else was great. On Raw, like it just, and even that was at least effective. So, again, I hate the Karrion Kross character. I think there's so much they could do with him if they change the character, but it did set up a match for next week. So, like a whole big 8-man tag with the Wyatt Six and the Final Testament and the Miz. So it has a purpose, to the point where I'm kind of dreading Raw going back to 3 hours. on Netflix. just because it's so good. Like, it's just become such a good show and such a streamlined show. And I don't feel like we're missing anything because when I don't see the Creed Brothers every week, and when the Creed Brothers do come out, I'm like, oh, let's watch the Creed Brothers. Okay, cool. You know, and it just becomes exciting again. So yeah, I'm down 100%. I will say this, just going back to Survivor Series, I could watch Otis wearing a brand new t-shirt all the time. Like, Otis putting on the True Classic. Like, I have mail ordered t-shirts before, not from True Classic, but from Fresh Clean Tees, and they have a great product, and I'm wearing one right now, actually. But I would order a True Classic tee just because of the Otis commercials. Like, Otis coming out and being like, oh yeah, like, all he did was impersonate the Kool-Aid man during the entire commercial.
Right.
And it worked. And then the fact that he was naked underneath was even more hilarious. But yeah, just very well done. Highly recommend. 10 out of 10, whatever numbers you want to use. So there you go. Tune in next week when we do the list of wrestlers we would like to hear, or personalities we would like to hear on a podcast. And yeah, and then the week after when we do dead wrestlers we would like to hear on a podcast. Because what a way to celebrate the holidays. What a way to celebrate the holidays than dead wrestlers you'd like to hear on a podcast.
Ghosts of wrestlers past.
There we go. Ghosts of podcast, ghosts of wrestlers past. So that will be enjoyable. Hope you enjoyed our program. I do still think the highlight of the program was us talking over the show opening when we played it like 40 minutes into the program or 30 minutes into the program. But you know what? Doesn't matter. It was classic. We did have a great conversation about college football that none of you heard, but Patrick O'Dowd's doing a podcast on the college football playoff anyway. So you will get to see that and hear that. And look, once the playoff actually happens and we have winners and losers, again, wins and losses don't matter until they matter. They will matter when we have the first and second round of the playoff over, and we can talk about that here on this program. But until then, hey, if you're in or around Phoenix, Arizona, go out and buy some IZW tickets while you still can. IZW Monster, February 22nd, 2025. Frankie Kazarian returns to IZW. He did actually wrestle on IZW before. My first ever matches, or my first ever show as a ring announcer, Frankie Kazarian was on back in 2006. And then he wrestled his last IZW match in 2007. So he is making his return to go one-on-one with the Navajo Warrior as part of the Navajo Warrior retirement tour. We also announced last week, Martin Casals coming back to IZW in a big way. They're going to have a lot of fun. And of course, our annual Big Rumble Monster and so much more. So come check it out. It's going to be a damn good time, because it always is, as Patrick O'Dowd can tell you. It's a damn good time. And people literally travel from across the country to be a part of these events. So, and multiple people who traveled across the country to be a part of November are going to do it again in February. So it's, we're very lucky. We're very, very lucky.
I'm not though.
You're not though. Yes. I'm not trying to insinuate that Patrick O'Dowd will be the person you meet at the door again, but, maybe someday, but not in February, because he's probably got a Disney trip around there that he has to do. Cause that's what Patrick O'Dowd does. He comes to see me and he goes to Disney trips. That's, and hey, I would do that too. So, especially the Disney trip part. So yeah, IZWTix.com. Get your tickets while they can. Second row VIP is going to be selling out soon, and then we're down to general admission. So be a part of it all. It's always a good time. We only do it four times a year for that reason. So it will be amazing, fun, and enjoyable. And until then, until next week when we talk about wrestlers with a podcast, listen to the theme song of a wrestler with a podcast.
You just made the list!
TheChairShot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Acknowledge me!
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.